All right. Good evening. Welcome back, everybody. It's so nice to see you and to see some new faces as well. I must be, I don't know exactly why, but I guess this week we're introducing only Steins. Next week we're doing only Goldbergs. That's the way it's going to be. This week we get Steins. We have two new ones. We're happy and we'll take it. Anybody, you're always welcome. I know Robin, I'm sure, is going to be here if she can. Liz, whatever. There's a few more that'll join us. But anyway, it's great to see you all. I hope everyone had an uplifting Yom Kippur, a uplifting Rosh Hashanah. I know we spoke before Rosh Hashanah, but we really haven't spoken since then. And I hope you had a really wonderful Sukkot and Simchas Torah. Baruch Hashem, we did as well. And I'm happy for us to get back into a groove. You know, it's interesting. Today is Rosh Chodesh. Today is the beginning of a new month. And the name of the month, if you look just simply at the names, it's called Cheshvan, the month of Cheshvan. But if you were paying attention when you were in shul the other week, when we last Shabbos, when we were introducing that the new month is coming, we actually call it by a different name. It's called Mar Cheshvan. Everyone notice that? If you look on your calendar, sometimes it'll say it that way. Instead of it just being Cheshvan, it's Mar Cheshvan. And the word Mar is the word bitter. You say, why? Why would this be bitter? So some of the commentaries point out, and that is there are zero holidays in this month. I know for most of us, we're like, whew, thankful. But from a purely Judaic perspective about what the holidays are supposed to do for us, it's a bitter month. We don't have any mile markers to, events to really keep us on the straight and narrow.
No days off from school.
I'm not sure if I'm about to get logged off. I just got a message. So if I log off, I'm going to log back on. Okay. I don't know who that was, but popped up that I logged out. Okay. So it's called Mar Cheshvan. So in a way, it's sweet but bitter. No holidays, but the sweet is that we get to be on a roll for a little bit, and hopefully we can carry through into the colder months of the fall and the winter. So everybody's on Spilkes. Everybody's on pins and needles. What are we going to do this semester? What are we going to talk about? So I'm not going to tell you. I'm not. Not yet. Not yet. What I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you what I think to be a fascinating insight about the first parsha in the Torah. We just read it. Parshas Bereishis, it's the first portion in the Torah. There's so much there, and you know, of course, that we're going to touch on what's my favorite? Garden of Eden.
Garden of Eden.
Yeah, of course, we're going to have to touch on that. But to get there, we actually have to tell a different story. Let's tell the story about Cain and Abel. I'm sure everybody is familiar, so do it for me. For my sake, I'm just going to review it to make sure that I can keep my rabbinic license. So if I get something wrong, please keep it to yourself. The idea of Cain and Abel is a fascinating story. It really is. We know the basic storyline of where you have two brothers. They are the children of Adam and Eve, the children of Adam and Chava. And they get into an argument. Why? Because the Torah tells us that each of them brought an offering to God. Cain was the first to bring it, and Hevel, Abel followed suit. But for what seems to be unfair, God agrees to accept the offering of the second one, of Hevel, and ignores that of Cain, of Cain. What is it? What's wrong with it? So let me read you the words of the Torah itself. Okay, Cain and Abel are born. Sorry. Now the man had known his wife Eve, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, "I have acquired a man with God." Additionally, she bore his brother Abel. Abel became a shepherd, and Cain became a tiller of the ground, a farmer. After a period of time, Cain brought an offering to Hashem of the fruit of the ground. And as for Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and from their choicest. Hashem turned to Abel and to his offering, but to Cain and to his offering he did not turn. This annoyed Cain exceedingly, and his countenance fell. The Torah tells us that, yeah, Cain was the first to bring, but he brought, okay. I took the choicest fruits for myself. I took the best vegetables for myself, and I threw God a bone. I gave him something. The Torah says that when it came to Hevel, came to Abel, he gave the choicest, the best of his flock. Hashem says to Cain, "Why are you annoyed, and why has your countenance fallen? Surely, if you improve yourself, you will be forgiven. But if you do not improve yourself, sin rests at the door. Its desire is toward you, and yet you can conquer it." The words are getting smaller and smaller as I get older. Here it is. Cain spoke with his brother. Here's where this is the part I want you to focus on. Cain spoke with his brother Abel, and it happened when they were in the field that Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Hashem said to Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" And he said, "I do not know. I come from the Jeffrey Archer book of Am I My Brother's Keeper?" Okay, for those of you who know, that's an author who wrote a book called I Am, or whatever, My Brother's Keeper. The Torah actually just says, he said, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" Then he said, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground." And then he gives him a punishment, and we know the rest of the story. Okay, yes, we're good. Anybody lost yet? Fabulous. Okay. What is the underlying problem between Cain and Abel? What would you say? Let's make this interactive. Come on, folks, wake up. What's the
Jealousy. Jealousy.
jealousy? Jealousy from the fact that Cain sees he brings an offering, God doesn't accept it. Abel brings an offering and it is accepted, so he's jealous. Okay, they're out. I'm reading you the words again. Cain spoke with his brother Abel. What'd he say?
If you do better, then God will accept you.
Really? How do you know that?
That's what you said.
I did not. Shall I read it again for you? Listen carefully. Hashem said to Cain, "Why are you annoyed and why has your countenance fallen? Surely, if you improve yourself, you will be forgiven. But if you do not improve yourself, yada, yada, yada." This is God talking to Cain. The very next sentence, Marsha, Cain spoke with his brother Abel. Period. And it happened when they were in the field that Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. What did Cain say to Abel?
We're not told.
We are not told. I mean, that's just like, what is this doing here? It's like my coming along and saying, "Oh, by the way, I saw one of your neighbors." Don't you want to know what transpired? I saw him and, like, give me a little more tea. Come on.
Who
There's
did you
nothing
speak
here.
to?
There's nothing there. Cain spoke with his brother Abel. We're not told. But you are correct, and that is the underlying issue was jealousy. Abel's offering was accepted and Cain's was not. But the truth is, I have to fill you in a little bit more because this is not the first fight between the brothers. As we've said many times, and it just bears repeating, the Torah's recorded words are not meant as a history book. If it is, it's terrible. It is a terrible history book because A, it doesn't go in order. And most importantly, it jumps. You can turn one page and be 50 years later. Or you can turn 150 pages and it's 2 weeks earlier. That's not how you write a history book. And how about more detail? The Torah is very, very rich in some areas and extremely quiet in some other areas. So just to reiterate, the Torah is not a history book, and it's there. Anything that is recorded is meant to analyze and understand why it's chosen to tell me something. But there's so much more that is not recorded. This is very commonly referred to as a midrash or the Talmud that fills in some of the background, some of the additional pieces. So the Midrash tells us a really amazing thing, and that is Cain and Abel, from the very get-go, were already arguing. Think about this. They're the only people in the world, basically, and the wide world is open to both of them. And they decide that they're going to split it. They're going to divide it amongst themselves. One is going to take the actual land, and the other is going to have possessions, movable objects, whether it be cattle, fruits and vegetables, the trees that produce it. There's the land, the karka, it's called in Hebrew, and then there's the movable objects, the possessions. Cain was going to take the earth, the physical geography, and Abel was going to take all of the possessions. And you'd say, okay, that sounds like a good split, except now they both went against each other. Cain basically tells Abel, hey, get off my land. You can't be walking on my ground. Abel's like, what do you want me to do? Fly in the air? Well, what do you want me to do? And while we're at it, Abel says back to him, the clothes you're wearing, that's mine. You just get the ground, remember? Anything that's a product, that's mine. And they're having this back and forth. Argument number one. But it keeps going. Okay. In fact, if you really want to analyze this idea, let's even read the words of the Torah again. When Cain kills Abel, when he actually kills him, God comes to him and he says, I hear, says, where's your brother? Am I my brother? What have you done? Listen to the words. The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. I never noticed it before, but who cares? It should just simply say, the voice of your brother's blood cries out to me. Isn't that the basic message? I know what you did. Your brother's blood is calling out to me from the ground. And if it wasn't in the ground, so what?
Because
The
he
Torah.
owned the land, he had
Yeah,
the
the Torah is alluding to the fact that here it is. You had all the land in the world, and that wasn't enough for you? You wanted even more to the extent that you killed your brother over it? You're picking up on that subtlety? That even in the verse itself, it's hinting to the fact that from the very ground that you have, you still wanted even more, and even at the cost of killing your brother. There's two other opinions in this Midrash, that their argument wasn't only over the land and the possessions, but it also was in whose territory eventually the temple in Jerusalem would be built. The second opinion says they didn't divide up the world. One got land, one got possessions. They divided up the whole world. But they were arguing. One says you take Africa, the other one says I'll take Asia. It's like risk. I'm going to conquer Europe and you can have the Americas, right? I just want to know who gets Kamakachka, right? Whatever that little, farshtunkin a piece off Russia. You guys know the game Risk? No? Yes? Oh my gosh. Forget Torah. That's it. We're talking Risk. This is crazy. How do you not know the game of Risk?
I know the game
No.
of Risk.
What?
I know the game of Risk. And
Okay,
I
you know
know
the game of
Kamakachka too,
it's
but
all about the world. It's
see,
conquering
that's why I invited
the
you, Jake.
world. I didn't understand what you said at first, but
The game of Risk. I don't mean yeah.
the risk. Oh, whatever. Okay. Long story short, this second opinion in the Midrash is dividing that they were dividing up. But when it came to where the temple was to be built, that's where they drew the line and they were arguing who gets what. Third opinion. There's three opinions in the Midrash. The third one is a fascinating one. I'm asked this question, Rabbi, who did Cain and Abel marry to have children? You ever hear that question before? Because the Torah only, huh?
I actually read about that this past holiday, and I was like shocked. I didn't know that story at all about them being born with twins and triplets and
I'll show you where it comes from. I'll show you where this comes from. Again, you've heard me say this probably 100 times. My goal is for you to be able to open up the Torah and learn to be analytical. Don't just read it as a storyline. The words, the way they're spelled, what is told to us, what's not, analyze. I'm going to read you the sentence, okay? First, I'll read it in English and I'll show you why English is a deficient language compared to biblical Hebrew. Okay? Here's what it said. I'm going back to the beginning of the story. Now, the man had known his wife Eve, right? Adam knew Eve, he lived with her, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying whatever the reason why she named him. And additionally, she bore his brother Abel. Sounds great. Now let me read it in Hebrew for you. Ve'ha'adam yada et chava ishto. And Adam knew his wife Eve. Vatahar, she became pregnant, she conceived. Vateled et Cain. And she bore, in English, it'll just say she bore Cain. But there's a word in there, and we've said this before, the word et, Aleph Tav, doesn't have an English translation. Vateled et Cain, but even if you don't know what it means, just listen. She bore something et Cain, and she said, why? Next verse, Vatosif laledet, she additionally gave birth, et achiv et hevel. English, it just translates as his brother Abel. But you heard me say two more times the word et. Yes, you heard that? The Midrash, they all want to say, what is this extra word et coming to teach me? Michelle, now you have the answer. That when Cain was born, there was one et. There was an addition, meaning he was born with a twin. Hevel, there's two twice. Twice it says the word et. Et achiv, his brother, et hevel, Abel. Because Abel was born with two twins, all girls. So Cain has a girl, twin sister, and Abel has two. He's a triplet. I know. Everyone's like, what? Come on. Okay. See, if I had introduced this, you'd all be like, I don't know what he's smoking. But Michelle brought this up, not me. So, if anyone's going to ask the question, it's on Michelle. I'm just verifying that she's really smoking something.
She does look very happy, I have to say.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
As soon as I read it, I said, honey,
You got to read this.
read this.
But now I want to show you where the source of that is.
Yeah.
Because this word et,
Et.
again, it doesn't translate into English, but every single time, without exception, the Talmud, the Midrash, they all try to understand what is this word et coming to include, right? It makes perfect sense. It's coming to include another child because it's talking about giving birth. So it's not just she gave birth to Cain. It says et Cain. And it doesn't just say she bore Hevel. It says et achiv et Hevel. His brother, Abel, with the word et twice. That's who they married. But please note, and this is, we're going to bring this now. Cain has one twin, has a sister, let's put it that way, has a twin. Abel has two. Cain and Abel are arguing who gets the extra one. Each one of them has one. And there's one more. They're arguing who's going to get this lovely lady. Now, I know, I read it all over your face, Liz. Yes. They are sister and brother. I know. I know. But if that's all you got, the species goes on. Yes. How did you understand it, Liz? Who did they marry?
I never thought about
Okay.
it.
So now I'm putting the onus back onto you. You do homework tonight and come up with another answer. But this is the one I'm sticking with. Okay? So we have three opinions what Cain and Abel were fighting over. One was
Did they at
the
least
land.
switch?
One?
Did they at least switch?
Maybe. Let's hope so. The gene pool at some point got expanded. I don't know. There's only, oh, whatever. It's a terrible, terrible example, right? If Gilligan never got rescued, who are they gonna marry? Okay, I mean that's what you got. That's the why Hashem read, did it this way. I don't know. I don't know the answer, but that's the fact, Jack. Okay. So you have a midrash that says there's three different opinions. The argument was either how to divide land versus possessions, or number two, they are dividing the land, but they were arguing where the temple should be built. And the third was who gets the extra, so to say, the extra twin. Now, you can shake your head and say, fascinating piece of information, Rabbi. Why are you yanking my chain on this? Like, who cares? Like, okay. And what difference does it make for me in 2025? Okay. So there's a general rule, and I think we've spoken about this. When you have disagreement among the sages, they're not always meant to be mutually exclusive. In fact, I would say the majority, if not all the time, they're saying they're looking at it from a different perspective, but they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. The way the Talmud phrases it is when you have an argument, the Talmud will sometimes finish by saying, Zeh v'zeh, this one and this one. Divrei Elohim Chaim are the words of the living God, meaning they are both true. Now, I was a kid and I had an argument with my sibling, and I would go to my mother, and my mother would listen to him first, of course, and then say, oh, you're right. And then she would listen to me and she'd say, oh, you're right. And the two of us would say, but how can that be? She says, okay, you're also right. That's the way. There is merit to all of it. So how can we go ahead and reconcile three different opinions about this story? And this is really the thrust of what I want to talk about. I'm going to weave in to our study of the Parsha. I'm going to weave in Pirkei Avot, what we studied last year, Ethics of the Fathers. It's a set of Mishnah that talks about ethics and values. And in chapter four, which at the pace we go means we'll probably do this, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years from now, the pace we go. In chapter four, it says there are three things that drive a person out of this world. There are three things that are so detrimental to a person that they are so harmful to the person that they are motzi es ha'adam min ha'olam. Remove the person from this world. What are the three things? Hakina, the hataiva, the hakavod. Jealousy, lust, and honor. Jealousy, being jealous of others, living a life of constantly looking to what the Joneses have and trying to keep up and being jealous what someone has is a way to absolutely guarantee you do not enjoy life. It takes you out of this world completely. You eat yourself up alive. How can he have this? I work much
Matter
harder
where it
than he
was.
does.
Thank you.
How could he? Why does this schlemiel get to win the lottery? I don't understand. And I'm always jealous of what someone else has. Or taiva, of constantly pursuing your pleasures, of physical pleasures, more and more and more, whether it's monetary or the pursuit of desires or food, whatever the pleasures that the physical world entices us with, not to say that we don't partake of it, but if that becomes your essence and you're always pursuing, you're never going to be satisfied, ever. And the third is the pursuit of honor, a feeling, why aren't enough people honoring me? Right? If you've ever gotten angry, I take that back. Present company excluded. If you've ever seen someone get angry, if you've ever seen, I would bet dollars to donuts, I would bet that a large percentage of the reason the person's angry is because they felt slighted to their honor. You're going to talk to me like that? Do you know who I am? What do you mean? I'm telling you, this makes no sense what you're saying. Why are you ignoring my opinion? Honor. Honor gets in the way. Kina, taiva, kavod. Jealousy, lust, and honor are the three things that drive a person from this world and likely brings them to an early grave, because it's just all-consuming, says the Mishnah. The suggestion that's being made from this wonderful, wonderful book that I'm reading, Sefer, beautiful, beautiful, I love it. He wants to suggest that the three opinions in that Midrash of what Cain and Abel were arguing are exactly these three things. Let's talk it through. The jealousy. Cain is jealous. He has all the land in the world, but he's jealous because he doesn't have all the possessions on it. Yeah, I have a lot, but I want what he's got. And he wants a. He's driven by jealousy. The fact that he wants the other woman. I need another one. It's not enough. No, gotta have another one. That's the pursuit of pleasures. Not saying, listen, you know me. I like being married, Baruch Hashem. I love the fact that I have children. I love the fact that I have a wonderful relationship. But you know, I'm not taking a second one. Not happening, folks. No chance. No chance in the world. Okay? And the third is they're arguing who should get the temple? Who should, well, I should be in my territory. That's all about the honor. The three, perhaps, they're all true. They're each expressing, each one of the opinions in the Midrash is expressing one of those three. And in totality, what happens? The very first murder in history. That's exactly what the Mishnah says. These three things takes a person out of this world. In this case, it was literal. It took a person out of the world. It took Cain killing Abel over those three traits. It's amazing when you take the time to read the sentences carefully. But it's not the end of the story. Because the truth is, this seed of these three traits already started a little bit earlier. Cain inherited it. Now, can't go too far wrong here. When I ask this question, there's really only one right answer. Who could he have possibly have inherited these negative traits from? You only have one option.
Two
Come on,
options,
folks.
right?
It's
Was
too
it
obvious.
from Adam?
Of
Eve
course, it's from their parents. There are only four people in the world besides the twins. There's Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel. Shkoyach. So, where do we see that Cain and that Adam and Eve? So, here we go. Drum roll. We go to the story of the Garden of Eden. We go to the sin of eating from the tree. Let's do it quickly because I want to be able to discuss a few other things. What happens? The snake comes to Adam and Eve and entices them to eat from that tree, correct? We're all familiar with the story also? Great, because that's good. Because the Cain and Abel story is the end of,
Recording any progress.
it's chapter three, it's chapter four. The story of the Garden of Eden is, we're talking about the snake is chapter three. So here you have it. The snake says to the woman, the woman says, of the fruit of any tree of the garden we may eat, of the fruit of the tree which is in the center of the garden, God has said, you shall not either it or touch it, lest you die. Listen to what the snake says. The snake says to the woman, you will not surely die, for God knows that on the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you'll be like God, knowing good and bad. Aren't you jealous? He doesn't want you to know all this stuff. He knows that if you eat from it, you're going to be like him. You'll be just like him. Don't you want to be like him? Don't you see what he's got? Won't that be pretty? Keep going. The woman perceived that the tree was good for eating and that it was a delight to the eyes, and the tree was desirable as a means to wisdom. Listen to how the Torah uses that phrase, and that it was a delight to the eyes. V'chi ta'ava hu le'einayim. You remember that word ta'ava I just used before? It meant lust. It meant pleasures, desires. Yeah. There was an attraction. Ooh, it looks good. It probably smells good. I'm sure it tastes good. There was, hey, this is what I should be doing. Following, even though God said, don't do it. So there's a jealousy factor. The snake is trying them to be jealous of what God has. Number two is that they're following, pursuing their lusts and desires. And number three, even in the argument itself, the snake says that you'll be just like God, knowing that just like you'll be privy and have the honor of being godly. The same three issues. Yes, Liz.
I read something that there's a thought, hypothesis that they were possibly under the impression that they could serve Hashem better by knowing more, so that their intentions were a little more pure. How does that fit in?
It doesn't change the fact, at the end of the day, did they do something wrong? Yes, I understand perhaps your suggestion being that their motivation was for a good cause, but it's a hard question. You don't have to answer it. Do the ends justify the means?
Well, not after what happened.
Ding, 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 ding. That is correct. That is correct. So, yeah, they may have been under the perception that this should be the right thing to do, but at the end of the day, the definition of right and wrong is to do or not to do what God asks us to do. So yeah, you're right. That's like, how do I do this? For me, someone once gave me a very hard time that I'm in the wrong profession because I grew up in a religious home. I can't relate to those who aren't religious. I can't relate to those. Obviously, I disagree big time. But the argument went, so thought crossed my mind. Oh, I know what I'll do. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to purposely eat non-kosher on Yom Kippur. I'm going to do everything wrong so that I can go ahead and say, I know where you're coming from. Does that make sense? But you can relate so much better to me then. That's ridiculous. Or is a good friend like, that's bananas. That's nuts. You hear the point? I'm not disagreeing that that might have been a factor in why they chose to do it, because you do have to beg the question. They're not silly people. They're not stupid. So what was the motivation? They couldn't just be duped. I don't buy the second grade version. In second grade, it was fine. But I'm not in second grade anymore, and my brain won't just accept that. So, yes, you have to come on to understanding what was the motivation for them. And I'm willing, absolutely, I've seen commentaries like that as well. But it doesn't change the fact that they pursued something that they shouldn't have, either because of jealousy, or because of pursuing the pleasures, or because of the honor that was perceived as eventual for them. Okay? So, yeah, go ahead, Robin.
Not to pull this conversation in a different direction,
I won't let you.
but my understanding was when God said this, he only said it to Adam and Eve was not there. So I'm not sure how she was responsible because he
Fair
said to
enough.
Adam,
It is
hang on,
another. It is another.
hang on, that Adam, he said, you
Yeah.
will surely die to Adam. And then when he said something, Adam to Eve, it was like the telephone game. He's like, well, something might happen. I'm not sure. So.
Okay. So it is in a totally different direction, but I will acknowledge that there is. It is true that the actual warning not to eat from the tree was given from God to Adam, and Adam conveyed it to Eve. That is 100% true. What exactly Adam conveyed to Eve might be up for discussion, but I will tell you that at least from the reading of the verses, it seems very clear that Eve was told, don't eat or touch the tree. Because that's exactly what she tells the snake.
Right, but she also says the tree that's in the middle of the garden, that was the tree of life.
There were
So not
two.
that she.
They're right next to each other. They're right there.
Right, but well, I'm just saying it seems like she could have been a little confused because she didn't hear it directly, is what I'm trying to say.
It could be. I'm not suggesting that this was purely malicious, but there is definitely Eve knew that if God had said don't eat or touch and said don't eat from that tree, okay, that's pretty darn clear. But it's another whole discussion. I'm with you.
I just wanted to point out. I'm sorry,
That's
continue.
fine. Fair enough. But what comes out is that the same three traits, negative traits of being jealous, of pursuing the pleasures and the desires and the thirst for honor already started with Adam and Eve. Already started there. And therefore, the warning God said on the don't eat from the tree, because on the day you eat from it, meaning you gave in to those three traits, will bring about death. Whose death? Whose death?
Their children.
Abel's death. It already was, and it's exactly what happened. Open your mouth like, maybe that's the deeper meaning of that verse. On the day you eat of it, now we do know that it does mean that death will be decreed upon mankind and we will no longer be immortal. That's true. But on a deeper level, we're plumbing the depths a little bit further right now. That the phrase can be understood not only as death will come to the world, there will now be death, but in fact, it will bring about an actual death right here, right now. And you have the story of Cain and Abel. These traits. But now, this is what I think is absolutely the coolest part. What day does the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden take place? What day?
Day six.
Yes. Corresponding to anything on our calendar? Come on, Jake, you got this.
Friday.
Yes, it's a Friday, but a very, it's not always on a Friday. Come on, we
Sure.
just celebrated it, but.
Kadosh. First Kadosh.
Bro,
Tisha B'Av.
no. Sharon, come
Rosh
on.
Chodesh.
It's in the year.
No.
Rosh Hashanah. Rosh
Rosh
Hashanah.
Hashanah. Come on, folks. Rosh Hashanah is the day of.
I thought you said celebrating today.
No.
What about
Rosh Hashanah is
today,
the day
generally?
of.
Right.
What do we call it?
Head of the year?
New Year.
Birth of the year.
Oh my God. It's the day of. Come on,
Atonement.
Ben.
No.
Well, Yom Kippur is, but it's the 10 days. All right.
Day of
All
off?
congrats
Off? Day of off?
It's called the Day of Judgment. What's wrong? Come on, folks. It's the Day of Judgment. We're being judged on this day. What kind of year we're gonna have? And we turn to God and says, "Zochreinu l'chaim, remember me for life. Grant me a year of life. Write me in the book of life." You didn't say that enough times. If you don't name your kid Chaim, if the kid is born right after Rosh Hashanah, there's something wrong with you. Right? It's the name. I mean, it's just nonstop. Chaim, Chaim, Chaim. We talk about life, life, life. So listen to this point. It's fascinating. This day that we talk about, Rosh Hashanah, which if you go back exactly 5,786 years ago, it will fall out on the day of Adam and Eve's creation, day six of creation. That's what it corresponds to. And on that day, Adam and Eve sinned, brought death to the world. And we are turning to God and say, please, go against that decree and grant me life. On the same day that it was decreed that there would be death in the world, we turn to God and say, on this day, I ask you for life. But in that phrase that we say, right? Don't ask me to sing it. You know, it's not a good idea. Okay? But Zachreinu l'chaim, remember us for life. Melech chafetz b'chaim, the king who desires life. V'chasvenu b'sefer ha'chayim, and write us in the book of life. Why? L'ma'ancha Elohim chayim. For your sake, God, life. The God of life. Yes? Does that sound familiar? Oh, folks, hold on to your chairs. Why are we saying this three times? The word chayim appears. Remember us for life, O King who desires life, the one who we ask him to write us in the book of life. Why? Three times? Oh, watch this. We say Zachrenu L'chaim. L with a Lamed. Okay, Sharon, I'm giving you the job. Remember the letter Lamed. Okay, next phrase. Melech Chafetz B'chaim. The king who desires life, but it's with a bays. Susan, you're the bays. Got it? V'chasvenu b'sefer ha-chayim. And write us in the book of life is how we translate it. But it starts, the last word, ha-chayim, is with the letter hey. Michelle, you're the hey. Okay, we're going to go in order here. Michelle, say your letter.
Hey.
Susan.
Bet.
Sharon.
Lamed.
Hey, bet, lamed. What does that spell? Hey, bet,
Abel.
lamed.
Abel.
Hevel.
Hevel.
Abel.
Abel.
Abel. Our guy, Cain and Abel. His name in Hebrew is Hevel. Cain and Hevel. It's alluded to on this day where there was tragedy that struck because of these negative traits that bring death to the world. Remembering who the recipient of that tragedy is Hevel. And I go ahead and I ask God to remove that and let me have life. We ask for Chaim on that very day where Hevel was, right? Isn't that crazy? It's in the phrase itself. Zachrenu L'chaim is the Lamed. Melech Chafetz B'chaim. V'chasvenu b'sefer ha-chayim. Hey, bet, and lamed. Spells Hevel. But wait! If you act now, we'll throw in the Ginsu. I have one more piece. Listen to this. We have a hint on how we can rectify, how to do better and not fall into the trap of these negative traits. Look at that name Hevel one more time. The letter Hey is the number five, correct? Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey. What's the best thing you know of that's five?
Books of the
Ding, ding, ding. The five books of the Torah.
Torah.
And what's the very first word or the first letter of the Torah?
Bet.
Bet is a bet. Bereshit, in the beginning. And what's the very last letter?
Ahmed.
It's a Lamed. It ends with the word Yisrael. So Hevel, the name itself, is also a hint for us to merit to get Chaim by following Hey, the five books of the Torah that begins with the next letter Bet and ends with a Lamed. Hey, Bet, Lamed. Through the Torah, we can merit getting the life because we're given the tools on how to overcome the desires and overcome these negative traits. The Talmud tells us, God says, Baratzi Yetzirah, I did create the evil inclination, God says. I did. And he's there to test you and he's there to push you. But, Baratzi Lo Torah Tavlin, I also created the antidote. The antidote to the evil inclination is the Torah. Imatem oskim ba-Torah, if you involve yourself with the study, the learning, the observance of Torah, Ein atem nimsarim biyado. You will not be given over into his hands. You have the antidote how to keep the Yetzirah at bay. And that is the kryptonite against the Yetzirah is Torah. He has no power. No power when you are locked in. When you learn it and you put it into practice, he has no power over you. So the word Hevel, on the one hand, alludes to this idea, but it also gives us the ability to zone in and how to rectify these three negative traits about following our lusts, following our desire for honor, and our, and what's the third one? Is the jealousy. How? Learn what the Torah teaches us about character development. Learn what the Torah. That's what we studied in Pirkei Avot. That's what we have further to study. So this is the thought, okay? Which leads me, that's the end of what I want to share. If there are any questions on this, and then I'll get to what we're going to study. Does this Does this make sense? You following what has transpired here? We've
Yeah.
taken a story that we all know, and I'm forcing us to take a step back and say, is there more to this story? And what can I learn from this? So we learned, I think, two major ideas, and that is the underlying issue of the argument between Cain and Abel. And perhaps that's the reason why the Torah doesn't tell us the conversation, because you can look at it from so many different sides. If the Torah said they said these words, then that's all it is. Maybe, I'm suggesting, I don't know. But maybe that's why the Torah left it somewhat vague, because they're can be discussing it from three different angles or more. But their arguments are based on Cain's jealousy of Abel, Cain's desire for additional pleasures in life, and the pursuit of honor. That brought about death into this world and the killing of Abel. That's number one. But number two is that when we make reference to asking God for the opposite, not to have death, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when we ask God for Chaim, we ask Him for life, the name Hevel appears to remind us that it's those negative traits that lead down the path towards destruction, and that the path to life is just the opposite. The path to life is by following the Torah, by following what the dictates of God are. That allows us to turn to God and say, I ask you for Chaim. Those are the basic ideas that you now have a much greater, perhaps deeper appreciation for the story of Cain and Abel. Candy.
Before you go in and tell us, because then everybody will be so excited when we know what we're going to really be studying, I wanted to share I don't know if everybody, well, I know most of you know Sharon Cubing, if I'm saying your name right. She travels with her husband all the time, and she's really good about posting, and I love reading. I travel vicariously with her, and she was in was taking a trip to Sicily, I think, and this week she fell, broke her kneecap
Oh.
in a bunch of places, and she had to come home. But she did post some beautiful pictures of this cathedral that had mosaics of Cain and Abel. And I, while we were listening to you, I sent it to you. I don't know if you'll be able to see it, but she said that this cathedral was consecrated in 1088, and she said it's the most famous for its floor mosaics. And it covers the whole floor of the sanctuary. She said the mosaics were done and include scenes from the Talmud of the Jewish Bible, and the images are placed alongside of the Tree of Life. And when I was looking at those pictures of Cain and Abel with a little teeny tiny mosaic pieces, I was asking Gary, and he gave me again the story of Cain and Abel. But anyway, if
What are
anybody,
the odds that I would end up talking about that today?
no, and it's the pictures are really beautiful of this of the mosaic. And then one other thing, when you said about Judgment Day, I had a flashback that my very dear friend Kathy, who lives in London, her mom was really, really sick, and her brother called, and they were in Baltimore, and he called and said, "Kathy, you better get here. You know, mom has been just out of it. We really think this is the end." So she grabbed a flight and she got here. She went in, and her brother Tim was sitting beside her mother, who had not even opened her eyes in 2 weeks. And all of a sudden, she opened her eyes, and she was really religious, and she opened her eyes and she said to Kathy's brother, "What is today?" And he looked at her and he said, "Evie, it's Judgment Day." And she sat up in that bed, and the nurses came in and they said, "What is she doing?" You know, they hadn't seen her awake. And she just kept looking around saying, "It's Judgment Day. It's Judgment Day." So whenever.
I'll have to try that for the next Rosh Hashanah to get the congregants all fired up.
It was interesting. I'm sorry.
No,
Okay.
it's all good. All
I'm
good.
done.
Rabbi,
Yes.
I had a couple questions. Did before the sin of the tree of good and evil, did Did Adam and Eve have the Yetzer
Aaron?
Yes.
within them?
No,
That
not
happened.
within them. Not within them, but there was. That's the concept of, again, this is a huge topic, but the concept of what happened in the Garden of Eden, the snake is what that which represents evil, but that was outside of them. Part of the fallout from the sin is that now that became a part of us.
And
So that's a big difference between before and after.
right.
There, but yes, there was a concept of being enticed by this, the good and evil sides. Yes.
But we had that not had happened, we would not be so enticed by it.
Correct. That's
And
correct.
also,
The internal struggle that we all live with about doing right or and avoiding wrong, which is an internal battle. Those guys sitting on your shoulders, that's not really what it's about. It's really inside you. That's the struggle. It's so easy to go ahead and cheat on the taxes because they're never really going to know. Who's going to know if I go ahead and I goof off at work? Who's going to know? That's an internal struggle. It's not even before, now everybody's all afraid because there's cameras everywhere and somehow everybody knows everything. But it's really internal. But that's the fallout.
and something else that I read when I was looking at Cain and Abel was that they were conceived also on day six before the.
That's a big discussion among the commentaries. But yes,
Okay.
there are definitely those that say that they were, because there was, remember, the fallout of the sin is that Eve, right, is now going to have to go through the childbearing process. Well,
Right.
what was it before the punishment?
They must
It
have been just born,
was
the
basically
creator.
they had relations, the egg and the sperm conceived. Congratulations, it's a boy, Brises will be tomorrow, right? That's the way it was. So yeah, it there is definitely a school of thought that this whole story of even with Cain and Abel is on that day. There is such a school of thought. Okay. So here's where we're at, folks. Okay? The time is now 8:59, which means I have less than a minute to tell you. I'm frozen. No. Here's what I'd like. I want to give you three options. I have three options for you. Okay? And I'm cool with any of them. And I venture to say we're not going to come to a consensus, so I'm just going to throw it out there. One is we can do what I really did tonight. And that is to look at the Parsha, especially in the book of Bereishis, in this first book of stories that we are very familiar with. Really take it and plumb the depths a little bit further, peeling back a much deeper understanding of those stories. That's what we can do. That's option number one. And I gave you a taste of that. The second option, which I threw in there, is again going back to Pirkei Avos, which we did last year. We finished chapter one. We're ready to move to chapter two with great insights about Jewish perspectives and ethical character development. That's choice number two. And then the third choice is an interesting one as well. If we took a project, and that is to go through the book of Esther. I know it's not the season, but maybe we can set a goal to finish it in
In
time
time.
for Purim, right? In time for this Purim, not in 2 years, this Purim, to finish it with a much greater, again, much greater, and we'll go through it like we would do the Parsha of reading the words, reading the text, and getting some level of a deeper understanding. Those are the three options that I'm throwing out there. And I'm curious if we have even close to a consensus. Let's do this. Let me ask for raise your hand if you want to do the parsha like we did this evening of plumbing the depths a little bit further. Let me count hands. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, okay, 8, 9 and a half. Okay. How about option number two? Option two was going to do Pirkei Avos, the next chapter in Ethics of the Father. Okay, got a half a vote there. And the third option is to take the book of Esther and go through it similarly to how we're doing it with the parsha. So I see two hands, two and a half. Okay. So it looks like the first option won. It's the majority. However, obviously when we get closer to Purim, I will be more than happy to share insights into that story itself. So let's do that. Let's move forward. Let's pick something from the parsha that we perhaps know something about, but I hope to take it on a much deeper level, seeing much more depth. Because I mean this in the nicest way. You're way more advanced than we started years and years and years ago. You think differently.
Absolutely.
You analyze it much, much, much better than in the
Yeah.
beginning. You're ready for the next step, I feel. I feel like
Yes.
you are. And even for the newcomers, hey, Jake, in all seriousness, did you feel out of your depth with this one?
No, not really. I
Okay,
mean,
good.
I
Good.
felt, yeah. I mean, yeah, I had questions and things came up
And that's
about
fine.
it.
And next week, you please interrupt me and ask them.
Well, no, I just it's a matter of flow plus, at the same time,
Okay, but
trying to
feel free.
respect
This
everybody
is,
else's time and
listen, you can always remember, Candy, if there's extra time, Candy has a story for us. So it's not a problem.
I have one.
No,
No, a couple of years
I'm kidding,
ago.
Candy. We
No,
don't have the
this is
time.
so
And being
appropriate. It
you,
was a couple of years ago. You
no,
were trying
Candy,
to
I gotta
decide
take this
the
question.
topic. Turn it off. And I was talking to Michelle and I said, "What topic do you think?" And she said, "Rabbi T is so good.
Oh,
We could be
whatever.
talking about paper bags and we would
Man.
learn."
Thank
Michelle,
you.
didn't you say that?
Thank
I
you.
think I said the telephone book.
Thank you.
Well, okay.
There's a lot of depth in the telephone book. I'm just kidding. Go
Got a great cast.
ahead, Robin.
Okay, this is not a question. Well, it's sort of a question. Since we've made this decision, before each class, can you sort of tell us what we're focusing on in case we have a little time to look before?
You
Like, for
think I know what I'm
example,
going to talk about before the class?
yeah, no, like the parsha, the part that you're focusing on for that particular week, if you're going to dig into it,
How
like.
about I'll commit that when I send out the reminders,
Yes.
if I know the topic, I will add it to the email.
That would be helpful. That's what I'm saying. And I'm
Okay.
sorry I
But
was
I'm
not
not
here.
promising because sometimes, at 6:30 on a Wednesday afternoon, it finally comes together and I'm like, that would be a good topic. Maybe we
No,
should
I
talk about it.
understand. If you know ahead of time, that'd be great. And I was gonna say I had a commitment that I was a little late tonight, but I'm sure Jake introduced himself to you because I gave him the link and invited him.
You
As I
sure
get
did.
many more people, and there's other
Great.
people that I want to make sure from last time
Perfect.
that.
Perfect. Perfect. Gary, you had a question?
Comment.
Yeah.
You have three
Ideas.
ideas. I
I have
have a fourth.
Go ahead.
And the fourth was that the shedding of blood. And without remission, there is no remission of sins without the shedding of blood. And Abel shed blood and Cain didn't.
Well, it's interesting. The I don't think that that is a, let me say it better. I'm positive that that is not an essential part of service. Yes, it's true that in the days of the temple, offerings were brought and there were animal sacrifices that required the blood. But here we're living in a time, in a day and age, of where we do not do those sacrifices. We do not have any ceremonies per se that shed blood. Yes, the circumcision might be the only one that I can think of. But on a day-to-day basis, serving Hashem, serving God in the Jewish religion does not require a shedding of blood. So while it's a fair point in an observation in the story, I don't think that that's an essential component as to why Abel is considered on a higher level than Cain. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So, Sharon.
I just want to make a quick comment on what Michelle said. Michelle, most of the people I work with don't even know what a telephone book is.
Rabbi Cheetah. Yeah.
I know what a telephone book. As a young child, I sat on it to eat my dinner.
That's right.
Yes.
We did. We
get our haircuts, right?
Okay. So next week, God willing, we're gonna be on a good stretch here, and I'll let you know, hopefully, ahead of time, which parsha and which story we'll focus on. Okay. Again, if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to stay on. If you want to text me or email me any questions as a follow-up, always available. Love to talk this way.
All right. Rabbi?
Yes.
How come, and I think you alluded to it a minute ago, but everything seems to be on Cain. Abel must have contributed also in some way. We know that he was very careful with what he brought to God, that he gave the best, but this occurred in the field, which would have been Cain's place. Did he go to talk with him? Did they go to argue?
It's a fair question. It's a very fair question. The Torah seems to be very silent about that. When I was in yeshiva, so we always would study the Talmud with the commentary of Rashi. Rashi being perhaps the greatest commentary of all time. And we would often, our teachers would teach us that it's not only what Rashi says, it's what Rashi doesn't say. And someone coined the phrase, and it stuck with me, and that is Rashi's silence is deafening. It's such a valid way of looking at it. It's not only what the Torah tells us, it's why the Torah chooses not to tell us something that, again, deserves an analysis. I don't know. We can open it up to various possibilities, but the observation is 100% spot on. Okay? There is something. Abel is held accountable to some degree, the fact that why didn't he bring his offering first? If he was so in tune, why did he wait for Cain to do it? Good, he brought the better one. You can say because he learned from it. They brought him at the same time. He brought this. It wasn't first Cain brought his. It was not accepted. And then, Abel says, I better step up my game and I'll bring a better one. That's not. They brought it and one was accepted and one was not.
I mean,
why did he go first?
To me, it's also like the whole victim explanation for why somebody, you know, traumatize somebody else. Well, they were doing X, Y, and Z, so of course they're going to traumatize them. You know, it's like that's not an excuse to
correct
do one of the three things. So,
correct.
Sort of, to me, that sort of speaks to the fact that it didn't matter what Abel did, right? To a certain extent, what Cain did was inexcusable.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Perfect. Again, I love the fact that my job is to get the wheels turning. I don't have all the answers. I just want you to think more about it. And then when you hear it, the story being told or being read, or you reread it now, you're like, I never noticed this before. Like you said, Michelle, like you had never heard this concept before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank God you're still young and, you know, there's plenty to, you know, to go around. Thank God. Okay. I held you hostage long enough. Have a great night, everybody, and we'll see you, God willing, next week.
Thank you.